Well, thank you for this opportunity. What beautiful praise and worship. And that last duet, oh my goodness, that was so glorious. But what I loved about today was that so many of the songs were calling for the Holy Spirit to be here. And I need him. Because normally I'm funny. Sometimes I'm funny. But this is not a funny topic. And it's probably the most difficult topic I've ever tackled. And I appreciate an opportunity to share with you the life of my son, particularly Adam LaRoche, who has given me the stories I'm going to be sharing with you today. He is the one who is engaged in the fight against sex trafficking. I have met two of the women that have been recovered. He tells me I'm not to say they're rescued because they're not rescued until they're in a safe place for at least 18 months. But we need to face it. We're living in a dangerous world right now. We're living in a very evil world right now. And I think families are imploding. I think Christians are remaining far too silent as they're watching our government make decisions that are destroying the families. And I'm so thankful for a church like this where you're so grounded in truth and in Scripture, and that hopefully you're not going to fall for what's being told you out there. George Barna has founded the Barna Group. It's a marketing research specialist group, probably the number one Christian pollster in the world. And he has written a book, Raising Spiritual Champions. And he writes this. He said, Americans have a lame, half-baked commitment to raising children for the kingdom. So he surveyed a group of 13 to 14-year-olds, and this is what he found. Only 27% of them believe that God is the basis of all truth revealed in the Bible. 70% of them say that Satan doesn't exist or they don't know if he exists. 90% don't believe in moral truth. 84% believe we are not born into sin. Salvation is not necessary. And less than 1% of 13 and 14-year-olds in America have a biblical worldview. So when these kids were asked what influenced them, it was their peer group or the media, social media, or their schools or their friends. The church wasn't anywhere in that list. Parents, you need to know something about your church leadership. This is something else that Barna found out. His group researched the churches and showed that 64% of pastors now believe there's no absolute moral truth, 53% accept reincarnation as a possibility, and 42% don't believe that human life is sacred. You need to know who is guiding your children in the church, and I do know the Moyers, and I do know that you are in good hands with them because they are so grounded in their faith. But I will tell you, we had a pastor in Fort Scott, I'm not going to say his name, but when he found out that one of the teachers in middle school was teaching evolution, which she had to teach in the public school, and she also was teaching intelligent design, the creator, he set up a meeting with her, and she said, oh boy, here it comes, he's going to blast me for teaching evolution, but I have to, I'm mandated by the state. He came in to blast her for teaching intelligent design because evolution was true. He's a pastor in a church in Fort Scott, and he could not believe that she was teaching about a creator. You need to know who's teaching your children. You need to know who's guiding them. You need to know who's leading your churches. We are in trouble. More than ever before, thanks to social media, our kids don't understand how loved by God they are. They're being pulled away from their parents and live in a world of comparisons. And that's why I wrote this book, A Little Faith Lift, Finding Joy Beyond Rejection. Now, this is a humorous book written with a very serious message because I had a Bible study group of high schoolers. And I found at that time that youth are in trouble because they're always comparing themselves to somebody else. And they're always being judged. They think they're being judged by somebody else who thinks they're being judged by them. And so the circle goes on and on and on, and they never measure up. They're never pretty enough or tall enough or smart enough or cute enough or funny enough. There's always somebody who does it better. But God doesn't see it that way. God gives us all gifts, but we have to be teaching our children that. There is a rejection that is so horrible, so much worse, I don't write about it in here. Because what I write about is the bullying and the kind of stuff that most of us have dealt with. But there is a rejection that is so heinous that no one seems to know how to stop it. It's what happens when boys and girls look to someone other than God to make them feel valued. Did anybody in here see the movie Sound of Freedom? A lot of you have seen that. My son Adam is friends with Tim, and they have done some work together in the sex trafficking industry. And Adam, our son, says he's the real deal. Everything you saw in that movie actually happened. Now, my son was not on that rescue mission with him in Colombia, but they've been on some others in the United States that they've worked together. And we were so grateful for that movie. My son Adam quit professional baseball to go into the fight against sex trafficking. When he was still playing ball in the off season, he was asked by a group of Army veterans, friends of his, to please go to Thailand on a rescue mission. And he came back a changed man. He did not know what he was getting into. And his job when he got down there was to go into a brothel. There were a few policemen who were not on the take, but most of them were very corrupt. So it was a very dangerous mission, but they were to go into a brothel and they were going to buy young girls. What he didn't expect was that those girls were going to have no clothes on and be up on a stage behind a plexiglass screen. Some of them were 12 years old. And so these men, the military men, some of them were CIA people and some of them were Navy SEALs, and then Adam was in that group, he and another ball player, purchased a girl. He happened to purchase a 17-year-old, but not for the reason that the girls thought they were being bought. Adam took his girl to a restaurant. They were allowed to do that, which surprised him. They could take him anywhere they wanted as long as they had him back by a certain time, and told her about Jesus, and told her that he was there to rescue her, because there was a mission. It's an undercover mission, and all these men that he was associated with were there to save these girls. But he came back and he realized he could not play professional baseball ever again, because there was a calling so strong on his life that there needed to be somebody who could make a big difference, and he felt that he was one of those. I asked Adam to speak with me today, but he never can commit. It's happened several times that he has told a church that he will come talk, and the night before he gets a call and he has to go to another part of the country to be involved in these recovery missions. This time that's not the case. He's actually hunting bear in Alaska with his son, so so it's not quite as dramatic as it typically is when he's not able to speak with me. But he did sit down with me along with his partner Brian, who is an Army veteran who is very engaged in this mission, and they both have been on many missions in the last few weeks here in the United States to recover these trafficked girls. And I have all my information from them, so I'm giving you the facts straight from the men who are involved with the feet on the ground. I am certified to speak on sex trafficking. When we were living in Florida, my husband was coaching down there. I was in a mega church and they offered this class. It went on for weeks and weeks and weeks to teach us about the evils of sex trafficking so that we professional speakers could go out and actually talk about it. So I do have that certification, but Adam's action arm, the arm of his E3 Foundation, is actually called Proximus. They named it that this last year. There's 8 men involved in it, and they just hired somebody recently. I haven't met him yet, but he's going to be the ping expert. So when they feel that they have found these girls, this man is the one who can work his phone to ping where they're located. So he's a Navy SEAL, and he's a huge addition to the Proximus team. But Proximus means next one, and it is a subsidiary of my son's E3 Ranch Foundation, which also mentors PTSD soldiers and allows pastors to come there when they need a break and a little refuge. So when I was in training in Florida to speak on this, we got a call from a lady whose son had actually been a gamer. He was the kind that stayed in the basement and played video games all the time. Beware of that, parents and grandparents. You need to have your alerts on, up if your kids are doing that. Well, this boy was, and come to find out, he'd been awarded something because he'd won so many video games. They were flying him to California, giving him a free ticket, and he was going to go out there for a gaming competition, going to win a lot of money. And he wasn't to tell his parents, and they were going to give him a ticket that allowed him to leave right when school started, and he would be back when school ended. What that boy didn't know was that he had a mother who had her nose in everything he did, and she knew what was happening, so she called the FBI. They set up a sting operation, and this mother was flown to L.A., as were the FBI people, so that when her son got off the plane and walked down baggage claim, and there was a man standing there with a sign with this boy's name on it, the FBI knew that they had him. The mother went ballistic. She was talking to our team, and she just said, "Can you imagine?" She said, "I about lost my mind." I said, "Are you kidding me? It was a one-way ticket. You were given a one-way ticket. What did you think was going to happen? You weren't going to come back this afternoon and come to find out he was a serious trafficker. And so the FBI was able to arrest him. But had that mother not been in his space, not been looking at his emails and his phone, he would have probably never been seen again. It's a very common story. So when I was teaching, we had a lady, and Larry is here right now, and I think you probably remember her. She came to talk to us about what it's like to teach impoverished children. And she had this amazing story. She said her son decided when he was 16 that she was in his space too much. So she took that tape and put it all over her doors, all over his bedroom door, so she couldn't enter. Do not enter, nobody's allowed but me, whatever, all this tape all over. So she just burst through the door and walked in the bedroom. And he's on the bed, and he said, well, obviously you didn't read the sign on my bedroom door. And she said, obviously you don't know who paid for that door. And obviously you don't know who paid for the wall that holds up that door, or who paid for you to have a meal so that you could sit on that bed and put that tape on that door. Because I'm going to tell you something. I'm your mother. I'm not your friend. I love you, and I'm going to be in your space. I'm going to be in your backpack and in your mattress. I'm going to be in your email. I'm going to be on your phone. I'm going to be everywhere you are. I'm going to know who you run with, and I'm going to know where you are and when you get home, because I love you. And every teacher applauded when she said that, because we're all thinking, yes, those are the kind of parents that we need. The kind of parents who don't let their kids run the asylum, but that they're there to actually say to them, no, not on my watch. I taught high school for 20 years, and we were blessed with a Christian administration that allowed my drama department every year to put on little skits for the incoming eighth graders. And we would spend a lot of time on these skits. And I would talk to my drama students and say, okay, what are some problems you think that the eighth graders are dealing with? And it was always the same: cutting, suicide attempts, pornography, whatever. So we wrote a skit on pornography. My students did. And basically one of the freshmen walked out on the stage, and he's looking at his phone. He's in a spotlight, and then here comes a senior. And he walks up to him and he says, hey man, what are you looking at? Because this guy's just getting all excited. He goes, you're not gonna believe this. I asked this chick to send me a picture of her, and she did, but man, she doesn't have any clothes on. So the senior says, hey, you mind if I take a look? He goes, no man, look, this is so cool. And he walks over and looks over his shoulder, and he goes, dude, that's my sister. And you could hear the eighth graders just groan, because pornography, which my son and all of his team will tell you, is the leading culprit in the sex trafficking trade. It's where it all starts. And so when we had that skit, it was a way to let people know, you call it victimless, but it's not victimless. There's somebody's daughter or sister or mother or cousin or whatever. It's not victimless. These women never would choose to enter this field. Unfortunately, most policemen think that they are criminals. And because of that, Adam partnered with an Army veteran, and they purchased a strip mall in the prostitute section of Kansas City, Missouri. And my husband and I went there to actually do some work one day, to do some volunteer work, and the entire strip mall was renovated by Christians who decided that they needed to save these prostitutes. So these prostitutes had a safe place to come. And so now it's the coolest story. It's about a year and a half later, and now two former prostitutes are helping run it. They came in there, they found Jesus, they were saved, they turned their lives around. And what better people to talk to prostitutes than former prostitutes who know the difference? And it's run strictly by volunteers, and it's a great success. But Adam will tell you that every town needs one of these, because when police arrest a prostitute, they have no place to take them. So how does Adam's team operate? Sometimes they will set up a sting. The FBI is typically involved in this, and the FBI has people who are trained to write an ad in Craigslist, for instance, soliciting men and then offering them young women. So when they make the phone calls come to Adam's team, and Brian told me it's supply and demand. The phone lights up all night long. As soon as they post something on Craigslist that there's some hot little chick available, everybody's interested. But they did tell me that what they've been surprised about is the first question the man asks is, how old is the girl? And there is no girl. Understand this. This is all, please don't think there is a girl. There is not a girl. They just make this up. But they will say 14. And immediately, they said there are probably about half of the men who will say, you are really low life. you're really low life if you've got a 14-year-old. And Adam said it's kind of interesting that even in that field, there is a little bit of a moral compass that they want somebody who's a little bit older so that they're not engaging in this activity with a minor. We know that Satan is alive and well. We know that he seeks to devour and destroy. And I will tell you, he's having a heyday in the sexual industry. And I know that God is grieved. Adam's first experience to see how this worked was when he was called to Sacramento, California. It was a huge sting operation. And it was the first time he had seen how the FBI and judges and the attorney general and the whole team worked to arrest men who were buying these young women. So the ad went out in the Craigslist for a 10-year-old and a 14-year-old. They were sisters, but the parents were going to be there also. And the phones lit up. So it was in a motel. So the men were told what time to come. They were given their own time and exactly what room to come to. Now, the parents were actually actors and actresses who were made up to look like druggies. And Adam said he didn't even recognize them. From the time the makeup artists in Hollywood started with them till where they ended, they looked like some pretty scary people. But then they got a call from a man who said, "I'm so sorry, I'm supposed to be there at 5 o'clock, but I'm a softball coach and for my daughter, and her team just went extra innings, and so I'm not going to be there until a little bit later." Another was a Marine. They had cameras everywhere. What they didn't know was the FBI was set up in one room on the phone with different judges talking to them to immediately get a warrant to go after the computers at the houses where these men were going to be arrested. And so the men would show up, the made-up mother and father would answer the door, and of course they'd say, "Hey, where are these girls?" "They're in the bathroom. They're in the bathroom. They'll be out in a minute. We just want to, there's some ground rules here." Okay. And then the minute the money was exchanged, they were arrested. But that was the first time he saw just how huge this problem is and what a team effort is needed in order not just to recover the girls if it's trafficking, but in this particular case, to arrest the people. So how does trafficking start? Most of the time, it's a very vulnerable, typically poor girl who wants to be liked. My book has a few of those stories in it. She posts something on social media, and along comes a very good-looking man who says all the right words to make her feel beautiful and special. And Adam and Brian both told me when I sat down with them last week, they said, "They're professionals. They're good. They are so good, and they're very, very patient. Sometimes they will engage this girl in conversation for months before they'll actually set up a meeting with her. And then, of course, they take her out and buy her a pedicure or buy her a purse and make her feel very, very special. Adam was involved in a recovery, not a rescue, with a 14-year-old girl in San Diego who fell in love with somebody on social media. And then they started dating behind the parents' back. Parents had no idea. And all of a sudden, one day, the boy says, "Hey, let's just go down to Tijuana. You know, we can get some really good bargains down there." And vulnerable girl, there they go, and she was gone. She ended up in central Mexico in a jungle. She was trafficked down there. But fortunately, there was a woman who was involved. There are women who traffic girls, believe it or not. It's not only men. And this woman took a liking to this young gal, and she allowed her to use her phone, and this gal called her mother. And from that point on, they were able to ping, I don't understand any of that works, where this girl was, and Adam got the flight from Fort Scott, a charter flight, and they flew somewhere in Mexico. Dave, do you remember where they went? So, anyway, somewhere down there. Adam was not involved in going into the jungle and rescuing the girls. That was all heavy military kind of stuff, but he was the one that funded the plane through his foundation to rescue this girl. So then he sent me pictures of her on the plane with him coming back to the United States, and then pictures of her being reunited with her mother in San Diego. And it was just the sweetest, sweetest moment to see that when these things do happen, and they happen well, there is just such a relief for everybody. Sometimes the trafficker even meets the parents. The girl invites them over, and the parents think, "Gosh, you've got such a great friend. I'm so happy that you have somebody like that in your life." having no idea what this person is up to. Most of the time, these girls are drugged. There is a big organization out of Denver, and I had to drive the head of it to the airport once in Kansas City, and we had a very interesting conversation, and I said, so what's the worst thing you've ever seen? And he said he was in Indiana. He was called to a motel room, and there were three girls in dog cages. One of them was already dead, and the other two were so strung up on meth that they didn't even know their own names. Most of these girls are drugged, which is the reason they continue in this behavior. There is a Stockholm syndrome that comes into play. It's when the girls hate what they do, but they do it because it's normal to them. And there's a book that I would recommend. I've read it. Adam recommended it to me. It's called Paid For, My Journey Through Prostitution by Rachel Moran. And she talks about how they return to this evil because at least they feel adequate and they feel like someone is taking care of them and it's what they deserve. And the last part is what grieved me the most, what they deserve. Most girls develop two different personalities. The one that is outside the motel door, the normal behavior, but the minute they enter that door, the motel door, to do their trick, they become a totally different person so they can walk away and live with themselves. Adam recently, probably 2 weeks ago, was involved in a rescue with a girl in Kansas City, and it was a very dangerous mission, and his team did a great job, but there were a lot of policemen involved and a lot of other people to help. This girl had been trafficked 10 years ago. And he said so many times when they recover somebody, these girls start beating on them. This particular girl threw a lamp through a window to try to scare off the guys that were trying to rescue her. Recover her. And he said so many times that they will just start beating on them and they'll call them all kinds of names, start cussing them out and screaming and kicking and all this kind of stuff. But he said, if you just hold them long enough, sometimes it takes 2 or 3 hours, they start sobbing and they revert to their young life. And he said their voices even change when they now are young girls again and they feel that they're safe. Last 2 weeks ago, Adam's team was sent to Atlanta to rescue three trafficked girls in a very seedy part of Atlanta. And the sting took several days to set up. And when the girls were being recovered, they ran away, jumped a fence, and ended up in a motel room. Again, they were pinged, and there was a huge fight in the motel room when my son and his team tried to rescue them. But they were, I'm just going to keep saying rescued because I just can't say that. I can't say it right, sorry. So where do these girls end up? Most of the time, Adam's team recovers them and takes them to a place outside of Atlanta called the City of Refuge. I have met the man that runs it. His name is Bruce. It's a great story, and he's actually been to my son's ranch. He was there a few months ago, raising money for this City of Refuge. But it's just a great story because he was a pastor. He was sent to this really bad church that was going under just to close it down because it was in the worst part of Atlanta. He got down there and he started preaching, and before you know it, prostitutes started coming and homeless people started coming and druggies started coming, and the church grew and grew and grew and grew. And then he said, we just need a city. So now they have schools and a hospital and they have training programs. And I did meet one of the recovered trafficked girls who was at Adam's ranch. They brought her back to talk to a group of men who belong to Most Men Opposed to Sex Trafficking. And it was a huge deal, and I sat next to her, and she said, you know, usually when I'm in a room with this many men, I'm very, very uncomfortable, but it's so nice to be here where I know that I'm actually safe and protected. But Bruce, this man, started this whole City of Refuge, and that's where they take a lot of the girls. Now, the girl that Adam rescued out of Kansas City, she was taken down there as well, but she was only down there a month, and then she couldn't deal with it. And they think that probably something happened in the church setting with her, which is why when you go down there and they start talking about Jesus and you have to go to church and you're required to do a lot of faith things, she just couldn't deal with it. But she is at home with her grandparents, and Adam talks to her grandparents every other day. Bruce says that men have caused this, although there are trafficked women as well, usually trafficked girls who get too old and have a need to be wanted. They are called the bottom, and they run the stable of girls. They're a suspect, but also a victim. So what do you need to do? Understand the facts. Only 1% of child sex trafficking victims are ever identified. The average age of entry into the sex trade is 12. In 2021, there were 5,000 confirmed minors trafficked and sexually exploited in the United States. 33% of all trafficked victims are recruited or exploited by a family member or caregiver. And be aware, there is a video out there now of a professional actor. It was set up to talk to parents and say, do you think your daughter would fall for this online? My daughter would never fall for that online. We have talked to my daughter. Went to 3 different families. Good looking guy. You know the end of the story. The guy got to all 3 of them. And the parents went crazy when they realized that they thought they had talked enough to their kids, but it wasn't enough. Now granted, it was set up, it was an actor, it was all for just for social benefit. So nothing happened, but it certainly could have. AI can change names. Sometimes people aren't talking to the people they think they are. This just happened to my stepdaughter's mother-in-law, who was trying to figure out a place to help her granddaughter live in St. George, Utah. She knew she had a friend there, and his wife had died, and he said, I've got room. She could come and stay with me. They were talking for about 3 months online when all of a sudden Leah is the woman. Leah's daughter came in and looked at something online. She said, what are you doing on here? And she said, oh, I'm talking to John, blah, blah, blah. And she said, isn't John a doctor? Yes, well, this is really poor spelling and poor grammar for an educated man. Why don't you call John and ask if he's really been talking to you? It wasn't John. It was somebody that had been created, or somebody had gotten her number. But here she was trying to find a place for her granddaughter to stay, and it wasn't the person she even thought she was talking to. You can support reputable foundations that spend their money on this cause and not on themselves. There's one called International Justice Mission out of Washington, D.C. that's a great one. Obviously, my son has his as well. But just pray for the men and women who are brave enough to enter this fight, and for the families that are left behind, because I'm telling you, when they get called on these trips and the wives and kids know they're going on some pretty dangerous missions, they're just held up by prayer. So please pray for them, because it's not just Adam doing it. There are dozens of teams out there in this fight right now. We all know that Jesus is the answer, and I'm going to end with a poem that was written by a trafficked victim. And I just ran into this. This was sent to me last week. Her name is Xenia. I don't want to admit I'm a victim. Tainted by abuse, feeling irrational fear and shame, defensive and jaded, frigid, stoic, rude, rejecting before I get rejected. I don't want to admit I'm a victim who was too weak to get away, to fight, to stop the pain, to stand up to the bully who killed my innocence, who massacred my soul. I don't want to be the victim making mistakes that cause more abuse, broken choices that hurt me. I end up hurting others instead of stopping the pain. I want to stop being a victim, attracting predators, accepting abuse as my due, putting myself at risk, choosing to trust the wrong ones who just pretend to protect. Jesus, help me stop being a victim. You became a victim for me. You hung naked on the cross. You bore my shame. You were bruised for my iniquities. By your stripes, I am healed. Ladies and gentlemen, it is the goal of Proximus and all of these other trafficking organizations, Christian recovery teams, to spend their lives trying to teach the victims how much Jesus loves them. Greater is he who is in us than he who is in the world. But the harvest is great and the workers are few. Most importantly, guard your children. Guard your grandchildren. Keep the lines of communication open. And above all, impress on them how much they are loved by God. For, as I write in my book, he is the audience that counts. Thank you, and God bless.